You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates. You're listening to Absolute Empowerment with Coach Jeff Connors on The Sports Objective. Join Coach C, a USA Strength and Conditioning Hall of Famer, every Monday night to see in a variety of guests, including former players, former and current coaches, pastors, and others will discuss relevant issues in coaching today's athlete, with the goal of equipping the athlete and those coaching them with the physical, mental, and spiritual armor necessary to live their best life. Here's Coach Connors.
Welcome to Absolute Empowerment. Tonight we have my friend and previous acquaintance through some unusual avenues, University of South Carolina receivers coach Mike Furry. And Mike, so happy to have you on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm excited to be on here. I really appreciate you thinking of me.
Well, Mike, you know, the purpose of the podcast, Stories of Faith and the Power of the Human Spirit. And your story is one of the best that I've ever seen with regard to what I'm trying to achieve in this podcast. And it's just an amazing story, and I can't wait to get into it. But, you know, when I really studied your career and so forth, I thought about my one of my favorite quotes from JFK. We will be remembered not for our victories or defeats in battle and politics, but for our contribution to the human spirit. And that's really what this is all about. I guess what I want to ask you first is, you know, when did the passion for helping other misfortunate people click for you?
You know, it's, I guess even since I was been a little kid, I've always just kind of been very observant on just, you know, kind of like people watching, right? And since I was a little kid, I always, for some reason, it just kind of stuck with me that there are people that make a positive impact in your life, or there's people that make a negative impact in your life. And I always thought it was even more gratifying for people that have been put in fortunate positions to be able to help others, you know, either out of their position or achieve something that they want to achieve that they haven't achieved yet. And the gratification, right, the gratification of that individual who was successful or had achieved something, and them applying those, you know, that faith, that passion, that love towards someone else, and then seeing that someone else succeed, is like so rewarding. It's so rewarding, but at the same time, it's also valuable lessons, right? You learn more when you give or when you help than you do, you know, kind of just sitting around. So it's always kind of been, I've had that heart ever since I was a little kid. By God's grace, I didn't know I would be given this type of platform or this type of stage throughout my career from a playing standpoint and now a coaching standpoint. But definitely fortunate and blessed every day to wake up and have that mindset.
Gotcha. You're definitely a man of my own heart. I'm probably going to die trying to do something. I don't know what, but I'm always trying to do something for some reason. You know, that kind of puts me in mind of the fact that you just took this job recently. And besides X's and O's, I guess while I'm thinking about it, what are the main things that you want to convey to your position group?
Well, first of all, the first thing is not even, as you mentioned, X's and O's. And to be honest with you, it's not even football. You know, I'm a huge believer. What I've learned throughout my playing career and what I've seen, and obviously some of my experiences now as a college coach and or as a pro coach, the first lesson that I think is starting to establish the morals and values of what it takes to grow up as a man, you know, what it really is supposed to be like, you know, someday being a father and how you should treat your wife someday, you know, being a husband. And so, you know, starting to build a player to me starts with building a man, truthfully. And I think a lot of people always say that, right? But you know, rather something gets in the way or something becomes distracting of those, you know, of those mentions. But to me, the first thing is diving into the person, right? You got to get used to, or you have to do your research on how kids have been raised, what their home lives have been like, things that they've been through, you know, the maturity level that they're at, some of the insecurities maybe, right? You know, a lot of kids nowadays, they cover up a lot of insecurities with, you know, with false words or false attitudes or false, you know, impersonations. But at the same time, there's something underneath, right? That's holding them back from becoming what I believe that the good Lord's possibly has, you know, has planned for them to become. And so I think, first of all, diving into their life and trying to get to understand who they are as a person, how you can correct them or encourage them to continue to build, to become a better person. And I'm a huge believer that if you can do that with all 11 guys and you got 11 men to go out on that field that understand, you know, about life and the adversity of what that takes to be able to respond to or how to handle success or, you know, all those things that teach you life lessons. If you could take all that stuff on a football field, you'll have a heck of a football player. So I think you start by developing that man and then how that relates to obviously your preparation in regards to being an athlete and then obviously your performance and how all those things kind of go from a man to a, you know, to preparation and then to that final performance. And then in full circle, once you get to that performance and you now are successful, goes back again to the manhood of being able to obviously handle those situations and realize how fortunate you are where you're at. And now you start giving back and helping and impacting other people.
Gotcha. Well, let's go back to high school. You grew up in Iowa, is that correct?
Ohio.
Okay. Yep. I don't know why I was thinking, because you're going to go to Northern Iowa to school.
I went to school in Northern Iowa. Okay. Yeah. Ohio, Iowa is about the same.
Okay. So what city did you grow up in?
So I'm from Columbus, Ohio. Grew up in a city called Hilliard, which is about 12 minutes from the from Ohio State University.
Gotcha. So looking at the story, as I understand it, you're 5'10", 165 pounds. You had a pretty good high school career, correct?
It was okay.
I had a good high school career,
yes.
Okay, so you didn't have any Division I offers, but you decided that you wanted to be a Buckeye, so you walked on at Ohio State.
Yeah, so I was fortunate enough to have to be a part of a great team, a couple teams when I was in Hilliard in my junior and senior year, and had a lot of a success from a team standpoint, which allowed me to have a lot of success individually, and ended up becoming an all-state player my senior year, and really wanted to have get an opportunity to go somewhere and play Division I football. But as you mentioned earlier, 5'10", 165, probably a 4'7", 40 guy, probably not a lot of opportunities back then. And so I had no offers except to Mount Union, which was a great school at the time, a lot of history, and or to walk on at the Ohio State University. And that was a goal and a dream of mine, was to play at Ohio State, obviously being so close to school there. And that's kind of how you grow up, right? When you're from Columbus, Ohio, like that's the team. And so I ended up walking on at Ohio State.
What year was that?
So I walked on in the fall of 95. Was my first year, ended up being Eddie George's Heisman Trophy year, which was an awesome experience.
So, was Fred Pugach there then?
So, all of them were there. Walt Harris was there on the offense. Fred Pugach was on the defense. John Tenuta was on the defense. Lovey Smith was on the defense. It's just a name of great, great, great coaches.
Yeah. So Freddie played for my dad in high school.
Is that right?
Yeah. And, of course I know him very well. And I saw him not too long ago when my dad was inducted into a Hall of Fame up in Pennsylvania when his team was inducted.
Yeah. He was so good to me, while I was there at Ohio State. And then obviously, as I played in the league and he was in the league in Minnesota, it just has been a great friend ever since.
And, of course, John Tenuta was our defensive coordinator my first year at UNC Chapel Hill.
Yeah, so you'll get a kick out of this. So when Corin, my wife, left Cincinnati, where she was working for Bob Huggins, she then transferred to Ohio State. Her job was to basically be the co-worker to John Tenuta. So okay. She worked in there and helped him out quite a bit with, you know, all the things that those, you know, the ladies do with the recruiting and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think when John saw the number of people going to be graduating on defense, he kind of got out of there very swiftly.
I was just telling somebody the other day, they were talking about their teams and how they had two or three first rounders on their team. And I don't usually talk too much about my past because, again, as you mentioned earlier, it's all about the kids that I'm around now and trying to help build their careers. But we were part of a team at one time. I think there were 7 first-round draft picks on the defense at Ohio State, and I think 4 on offense. So it was pretty crazy.
Gotcha. Well, so you decided that, well, you know, I may not get a scholarship here. Something caused you to transfer to Northern Iowa, right?
Yeah, you know, I was I fell in love with the weight room when I got to Ohio State. And as you mentioned, again, you know, 5'10", 165, I went up to about 5'10", 185, 5'11". I grew physically, you know, while I was there for the year and a half at Ohio State. And so I ended up going from a 4'7 guy to a 4'3". I ran a 4'3.8 at the during the spring, ran under a 4 flat. I think it was like 3'8.7, 3'8.8, you know, pro shuttle. And at that time I had broken some school records there. So, you know, and I could catch. So I wanted to get a scholarship and went in and asked for a scholarship. And, you know, being a local kid, and Coach Cooper was our head coach at the time, John Cooper, you know, who would have ever known, you know, kind of what would have happened. But at that time when I developed, my mind really became more of playing college football than really just being a part of, you know, of Ohio State, which is what I wanted to kind of do my whole life growing up, right? And I started believing in my skill set and wanted to be able to have an opportunity to go play. There was a guy by the name of Mike Dunbar at the time who was with Coach Pinkel up in Toledo. Yeah. He was the offensive coordinator for Coach Pinkel up in Toledo that came down to our bowl practice at Ohio State, heard that I was kind of teetering about transferring, called and offered me a full ride scholarship to Northern Iowa and basically a promise that I would catch 70 balls a year. And then another promise that it was cold, but we play in the dome. And that was it.
Now, are you familiar with Bert Hill at all?
I'm not.
Okay. Bert was at Ohio State as a strength coach for a while, but I'm not sure what year. And then he was also the Detroit Lions strength coach for a long time.
Okay.
So I didn't know if you were familiar with him. I know that you spent time with the Lions as well, but I guess we'll get into a little bit of that. But so as I read it, at Northern Iowa, did you quit and go home for a while? Or
how do you know all this?
I've been doing my
research. I guess
when
you have family, too much stuff gets out. But, you know, it's funny because I ended up going out to Northern Iowa, and I was there for 7 days, and I called my father and my family, and I told them that I was going to head home, that this is not something I really was, you know, excited about and wanted to come back home and kind of figure things out. I was actually a big basketball player at that time, and that was really my main passion when I started getting out of high school. My dad's 6'4", 6'5", and figured I would grow a little bit, and I love basketball. So kind of started, went into to Coach Dunbar at Northern Iowa, told him that I was going to head home, and went and withdrew from school, went into my landlord at my apartment and handed my keys in and got in the car and drove 9 hours back home and left Northern Iowa.
So the influence of your father is what brought you back?
Yeah, I was, I got home that night about 2 a.m. in the morning and went to bed. And my brother at that time, My brother was my idol growing up. For a lot of people that know my family, my brother was Mr. Everything in sports. He was a big-time baseball player. He was playing at Ohio State at that time and just getting ready to graduate. He was a phenomenal athlete. And so I came home, got home about 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, went to bed. My brother and my dad walked in about 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning when I was planning on sleeping in. Then I was going to figure out the rest of my life. And they basically came in. My dad gave me, you know, some money he just kind of tossed the money at me and he said, be careful going back. And I was like, go back where? And basically my dad looked at me and said, hey, you know, your last name's Furry. And when we give our word, we stick with our word and that's who we are. And that's not going to change. And my brother just looked at me and said, hey, go become what you're supposed to become. And it's crazy because, yeah, that was it. And I got in the car and on the way to the car, I told my dad, I said, well, I've already told Coach Dunbar and I told my landlord and I told my advisor and everybody that I was leaving. And they said, yeah, we already called them yesterday after you called us and said, hey, Mike's going to call you. Just he's going to say whatever, but he'll be back the next day. So I drove back and the rest is history.
Awesome story, man. So I guess you could say that the quick version is 3-time All-American.
Yeah. Yeah, the quick version.
That's awesome.
So I was fortunate, very fortunate. Played with a lot of great players.
Yeah, what would we do without our dads? You know, yeah, my dad coached me in high school. I don't know what I would have done without him. You know, so huge influence on my life.
Yeah, absolutely.
So after you graduate from Northern Iowa, I'm trying to understand this because it gets pretty deep here, but
the first we might not have enough time for this journey.
the first move is you're a free agent with the Colts. Is that the first move?
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, the good Lord works in mysterious ways. And, you know, I always stick to the first, you know, in James where God always tells us, you know, he tells us in the Bible that trials and tribulations, right? They always teach you perseverance. He's got a bigger plan than what you expect. And so you just got to be patient. And so, you know, it's kind of like high school, right? Was the best, one of the best players in the state at the time and didn't have any offers. Went out to Northern Iowa and was a 3-time All-American. There was even chatter after my second year there that I would be one of the rare juniors to ever leave, you know, as a junior from an FCS school to go to the NFL. And so I figured it would be a shoe-in to be get an opportunity to be drafted and all that good stuff. And wasn't invited to the combine, didn't get drafted, and ended up having multiple teams to be able to choose from at the end of the draft in regards to being a priority free agent. And at that time, obviously, as you guys know, Peyton Manning and Marvin Harrison, and Jerome Paython and Edgerrin James and all those guys were in Indianapolis and was a great opportunity for me to sign with them and go and learn from those guys.
Gotcha. So then from there, you went to Arena Ball.
Yeah, so actually, I left. We actually went through the entire preseason in Indy, and I don't mean to hold your story up a little bit, but this is about faith, right? This is about helping people and trying to find your calling and trying to find yeah. You know the value of life and you got to start from somewhere. And here I am in Indianapolis, going through training camp, and I'll never forget this. I was at peace in regards to anything that would happen to me, you know, either making the team or getting it cut. But at that time, I just wanted to live my life. So it was a reflection where people could say, hey, why are you like that? Why do you act like that? Why do you have energy like that? Why do you treat people like that? And that was going to be my way of saying, hey, you know, let me tell you about the why. The why is Jesus Christ and what he's done for us and how grateful I am for everything that I do have, you know, to be able to give back. And so I really started reading the Bible a lot when I was in that training camp at Indianapolis. And, you know, I was been a Christian ever since. I've always wanted to be in the pulpit, to be honest with you. I wanted to be a pastor ever since I was 9 or 10 years old because of the influence that it had on people. And again, not to steward people by faith, right? But obviously just to one, live it, and then two, be able to help the people that are curious or people that were in need, or continue to build the strength of people that believe. And so, really became ingrained in the Bible during training camp, ended up getting cut, was fine with that, was totally at peace. I had learned a lot. I was so fortunate, and went home. And you know, I always had in the back of my mind that Jesus was a carpenter. And so I've always picked up a trade to be a carpenter, to build things. And it was something that I was really fortunate at. You know, I was able to do that and had that skill set. And so I started building homes back in Columbus, Ohio, and kept training. Wow. And waiting for a phone call. And then I actually ended up getting a call wanting to know if I wanted to get in the first XFL draft the first time. And I ended up getting in the draft, and I got drafted by the XFL. I got drafted by the Las Vegas Outlaws, went out there and played with He Hate Me. It was unbelievable, because here I am in Sin City, and the first people that I get kind of not run into, but really just kind of groomed to was Randall Cunningham, who had an unbelievable church and a discipleship out in Vegas. And here I am in Sin City, and I'm going to Bible studies and all that good stuff. And then of course that league went defunct. So I went back home and continued to build houses. And then at that time, there was a team by the name of the New York Dragons, an arena football team, who happened to be the Iowa Barnstormers, is where Kurt Warner played. They had been moved to Long Island and called me and wanted to know if I wanted to join them and play arena football. And I jumped out of, you know, like they always say, right? I jumped out of the boat and went to work.
Gotcha. I know that I think Mark Wahlberg is in the Catholic faith, but he's out there in Sin City doing his thing now. He's got this whole national deal with prayer.
Yep.
That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, it's just – He's an influencer that I like to follow him, you know, and see what he's doing. He seems — I've never met him obviously in person, but he seems like he's a great man. Obviously, proclaims his faith, lives his faith. It's pretty neat to watch his stuff.
I joined his group and I pray with him every day. Of course, with his, I guess you could say, recordings of prayer. But
yeah.
I love it because I travel some, and it's something that I do that I think is, you know, I can meditate while I travel with that. Yeah. So that's good stuff.
That's awesome.
So 2003, St. Louis Rams. Then from there, the Lions, the Browns, the Commanders, but you had a really productive year. Your best year was with the Lions, with 1,086 yards of receiving. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's so they say.
Okay.
It was 1,086.
Yeah, leading the NFC with 98 receptions.
Yep.
Okay, this walk-on guy, 5'10", 165, you know, who didn't know if he still wanted to play football for a day or two.
Yeah.
And now he's leading the NFC with 98 receptions. So, wow, man, my hat's off to you there.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, it was, there was some years there that were probably they went too fast. They were it was so surreal. But, you know, when I was in arena, not to get soft or sensitive, and you know, in my family, but, when I was in arena, we had a pretty successful run, and I was very comfortable. I was very comfortable. You know, I was one of the top players in the league and throwing statistics out week in and week out in games, and kind of, you know, thought I was the best of the best, right? And And I ended up running into a young lady just towards my last year in arena ball, my wife. And, you know, we got engaged and fell in love with her, and she changed my life. Yeah. And, you know, she looked at me one night when we were probably about 8-9 months before our wedding. And she looked at me and she said, "Why are you doing arena?" And I said, "Well, I'm doing arena because I'm the best. I mean, I'm the best in the world in arena." And she looked at me and, you know, the Blackstones, they're pretty blunt, but, she looked at me and she said, "The best in the world playing the NFL, not in the AFL." And I said, "You do have a point there." And she said, "Well, you know, we can't raise a family by splitting cities 6 months here and 6 months there and doing all that stuff, which is the life of the Arena Football League, and which is a great league. It helped out a lot of people." And, but at that time we were almost 25 years old, and she looked at me and she said, "We're going to have to figure this thing out, or you got about 8-9 months to get ready to go play in National Football League. You give it one more shot." And so for everybody that knows my wife, the backbone that she is, and her family and the Blackstone family and how stern they are, and, you know, how, you know, just the belief that she instilled in me and the confidence and just how she really changed my life. It was the best thing that ever happened to me. And all of a sudden we go back to arena, get picked up by the Rams, got a chance to be in a 12-4 team, got the chance to play in the, you know, and pretty far in the playoffs, thought we were going to the Super Bowl in 2003, and playing with Kurt Warner and Isaac Bruce and Torrey Holt, Marshall Faulk, like the greatest show on turf, and became a to this day, I could say it now, but almost a son to Mike March, who I look up to, is a phenomenal football coach and has become a great influencer in my life and a mentor in my life. But to be around all those guys was awesome, right? And then all of a sudden, Mike moves me to defense in 2005. He then gets the job in Detroit in 2006. And then for all that to go as fast as it did, and he's looking at me in week 9 or week 10 of 2006 season, and he says, "How many catches do you have?" And I was like, "I have no idea." And somebody said something like, "He's got 60 catches and there's like 7 weeks left." And Mike's like, "Well, you better hold on, 'cause you're about to have 100. And I just like, it's just, you know, but, you know, that, you know, coaching is the most important piece, I believe, to a young man's life. And I think it's like that because there are so many kids that look up to coaches, right? Whether it's what they've done or what they're doing, how they've handled situations. You have such a respect from players that, you have an impact in their life, right? And so for Mike March to believe in me, for Mike March, who obviously had a couple Super Bowl rings, has been a longtime vet and, you know, coaching in the league and all those things, this is where I really learned, you know, that coaching can make a big difference. And right. For a guy like me that was 5'10", 165 out of high school, walked on, went to arena, went to the XFL, and now I got a guy that believes in me, changed my life, right? Changed my outlook, changed everything about me. And then to have 100 catches, just, you know, it just kind of shows you that you never know what the good Lord has in store. But I tell everybody all the time that luck is just for the unprepared. I learned that a long time ago, and I always stayed prepared, and I was prepared for the moment. And when Mike gave me the opportunity, you know, the good Lord showed up and showed off, right? And I just got a chance to live it and was very fortunate. But, and I'm sure we'll discuss the rest of my family of how that's continued into my coaching.
Oh, yeah, career. We're going to mention the Blackstones here in a couple minutes. But, so with St. Louis, I think, I guess you got there after John Bunning was there as D coordinator.
Yes. Yeah, it was Lovey Smith again. Actually, Lovey and them were there. Very few. Was crazy. It's kind of, you know, that circle of life, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I love John Bunning. I mean, I really enjoyed working for him at Carolina. What a great man he is. I just wanted to mention, of course, the fact that you were nominated 2 times for Walter Payton Man of the Year Award. 2009, you got an award called the JB Award for Community Service, NFL Ed Block Award for Courage. Wow. So you were recognized in the NFL for what the other things that we've been talking about.
Well, again, first of all, you know, all those awards were, to this day, still, when I see at the Super Bowl, the Walter Payton men that get a chance to go up there and receive that award, you know, to be a finalist for that award, my wife and I to be a finalist for that award, it's still, you know, it's unbelievable. You know, that, but, you know, it's unbelievable to be recognized for that. Now, obviously, as you know, that's not why you do it, for recognition. But again, to be part of that platform, a National Football League, to represent the National Football League, to represent a National Football League team. You know, my wife was the main person and all that, driving, you know, the opportunities to be able to go visit people on Tuesdays and start our foundation and to be able to give back. And she kind of had taken a lot of notes since we had met Kurt Warner and other guys in St. Louis of how they've done things, and Torrey Holt bowling events or golf tournaments and stuff like that. And then my wife, when we had the opportunity to be able to do that financially by ourselves and not have to ask people for the funds, she put all that together. And, you know, the heart that she has, the heart that we have as a family, to be able to just understand how fortunate and blessed and by God's grace and mercy, what we've been able to do, it is our job to give back. You know, God tells us, you know, the Bible tells us, much is given, much is required. And for us to be given so much, before we even got to the league, we were given so much that our job was to, a requirement was to be able to give back and make an influence and make an impact in people's lives. And we love doing it. You know, we love doing it, not for the notoriety. We love doing it because we love making people smile. I believe the smile heals a lot more than medicine. I do. I believe that 100%. And again, you know, why are you doing this? Gives you an opportunity to spread the word about Jesus and what he means and how we can accomplish all things. That doesn't mean become rich, and that doesn't mean to become wealthy or famous. It just means that we can be able to get through anything by our faith in him. And so obviously all the credit goes to my wife for everything that we were recognized for. And I was just glad to be, you know, a part of that, small piece of that.
Yeah. I like to wake up in the morning and try to think about, you know, who can I lift up today? You know, yeah. I think that's the first thing people should think about when they get out of bed in the morning, starts the day the right way. But I, you know, I mean, so you got the Mike Furry Foundation, and you've raised over $500,000 for the homeless, correct?
Yeah, we were very fortunate to be able to do that with a lot of places, with a lot of missions.
You were board president for Basket of Hope, where Tony Dungy was a spokesperson.
Yeah, we got connected in St. Louis when we were playing out there. We got connected with a young lady who at that time was delivering baskets to kids who were terminal or have had a life-changing incident in their life that was in the hospital. And they deliver baskets once a month. And so my wife and I became heavily involved with Basket of Hope. And Tony Dungy was the face of it, and Kurt Warner was the face of it. And so we had just built an unbelievable relationship with Angela and the gang out there that's in charge of Basket of Hope, and it became a major piece of our foundation.
Gotcha. The so let's get into your coaching career a little bit here, and it's very interesting as well. You've been a head coach three times, right?
Yeah, three times already.
Okay.
How crazy is that?
So you were a head coach at Kentucky Christian?
Yeah. So when I retired, it's again, right, how the good Lord works. I was going to retire in 2010. Got a phone call from a father who was a young man who was one of the fathers of a one of the young kids that we got associated with and affiliated with the Basket of Hope. He ended up having terminal cancer. We lost him towards the end of my playing career. His dad actually ended up calling me when I retired and wanted to know if I wanted to be the head coach at Kentucky Christian, where he was the dean of business. So we jumped on board with that as fast as we could. Again, a Christian school, being a head coach, having the opportunity to impact all of them, we jumped on that right away.
So two seasons?
So we were there for two seasons down in Grayson, Kentucky. Two unbelievable seasons. They hadn't won any games, and I think they won one or two games maybe in a four-year period. And so we went down there and with the Blackstone family, my D coordinator, and you'll get a kick out of this. Barry actually started out on defense until him and Larry started, you know, yapping at each other too much. So then one day I looked up in my office and all of a sudden Barry's over on the offensive side. So they couldn't do it together. But no, I went down with them. You know, my father-in-law, my father-in-law always wanted to coach college football. And I can say that, right? And, you know, you know, you go back to why and why I became a coach. I told you about my mentor and Mike March when I was playing. When I got to Detroit, we were so close to home for 3 years that I got a chance to go home and watch my father-in-law and obviously his twin brother, Larry, coach. And got a chance to see him in the offseason, got a chance to see him how they were around their kids. And the one thing that I really started noticing that I was back home was I would call either one of them on a Saturday or Friday, hey, you know, best of luck tonight, and they would win. And then the next day I'd call them and say, hey, where are you at? And all of a sudden they're in a car with three kids, like trying to take them to colleges for visits to get them into school, right? Or going home in the summertime and training these kids that coach with them and listening to all the stories and the impact that Barry and Larry have had on their life, whether it was from a parenting standpoint or manhood standpoint or just the camaraderie, the love, listening to all the stories of my wife just talking about how all the time, like all their players were always over for dinner and they always became a father figure, right, to these kids and how they've changed these kids' lives. And I'll be honest with you, it really, really hit me at the end of my career, towards the end of my career. My father-in-law retired from coaching and he had a retirement party. And I think every single player either came back to the retirement party that he had coached or wrote him a letter or wrote him an email because of the impact that he had on their life. And so at that time, you know, I had a calling and I wanted to go coach and I wanted to coach football. But I also knew at the same time that my father-in-law wanted to coach college ball. And Larry, as you know, was the head coach of Salem College back in the day, had an unbelievable run and then had to get back into college. I had to get back into high school coaching. And I always felt like he wanted to get back into college too. Right. And one of the reasons why I wanted to take that job at Kentucky Christian and not really take any other avenue was to give them an opportunity to coach college ball. And I think to this day, it probably is two of the best years that we've ever had coaching football together in college and making the impact that we did together. Of course, with my wife as the boss.
Yeah, so our connection, you know, I played for Larry in college at Salem. I was a quarterback for 1 year. Well, I redshirted, then I played quarterback. I think I started maybe 8 games out of 10 games, 11 games, whatever it was. Larry actually left and went to West Virginia Wesleyan. When I was playing quarterback, we went there and we won that game against Wesleyan. And then when Larry came back as the head coach at Salem, he moved me to strong corner, you know, so I thought he was mad at me because we beat him when we went to Wesley, and so he moved me from quarterback to strong corner, but I ended up loving that position.
Yeah.
And, you know, you, of course, you played a lot of zone back then. You went to strong formation, but you didn't play a whole lot of man, you know, because mostly what people did was run the football. So you're forcing on a sweep more than anything else. But of course, we all became very close to Larry Blackstone. You know, when I first went to Salem, when I redshirted, he was the defensive coordinator. And the guys loved to joke around with him. They had, you know, he had just a great relationship with the defense. He'd be bent over with his hands on his knees and the free safety come leapfrog over his head. And he'd be standing around like guys would get footballs. They'd throw like 10 footballs at him.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when he became the head coach, you know, you couldn't do stuff like that anymore. Yeah. But
he still did.
Of course, I still talk to Larry. And Larry, your father-in-law, Barry, is his twin brother, and they are identical twins.
Yeah.
And when Barry would come to campus, I think, as I understood it, he never did it to me, but I think he would pretend fake like he was Larry and say like crazy stuff to people, the players. Mm-hmm. Like, what's going on with Coach Blackstone today?
Yeah.
And so then they'd see them together, you know, and they were just identical. So you know, that was always very interesting.
Yeah, I got a bunch of stories about them, you know, showing up together and people not figuring out who they were, but they were, you know, which one was which. But probably started with some of their ACT scores. I think Barry took Larry's ACT for him. I think something like that. But we'll talk about all that another time.
So they coach with you at Kentucky Christian and at Limestone?
Yeah, so we finished up at Kentucky Christian. Throughout my journey, there was a time where I was with the New York Jets for a little bit in between some years in arena. And when I was out there, young man by the name of Chad Pennington actually kind of selected me out of a group of guys that were trying out to join their squad and end up joining that squad for a little while. So Chad and I have had a relationship since then. Of course, he played at Marshall with Randy and all those good things. And so Kentucky Christian was about 20 minutes down the road from Marshall, but you had to pass. Chad had to pass Kentucky Christian on Saturdays to get to Marshall from his house. And he knew I was at KCU and he knew what we had done there and built a field and done all these things and flipped the program around. And Larry will tell you it was because of his defense, which he about right the first time. But we flipped that program around and all of a sudden Chad called and said, "Hey, there's a receiver job opened up down at Marshall. You know, I'd like for you to go down and visit with Doc Holliday." And so I went down and met with Doc and ended up getting offered the job there. And my job was to recruit South Carolina and coach wideouts. And so I started recruiting South Carolina, had a heck of a run at Marshall for 3 years, really established a lot of great relationships down here in the, you know, in the Carolinas and North Carolina and South Carolina and down into Georgia and all those good things. And so in Virginia, really Virginia, South Carolina, North Carolina, and Georgia, but really started creating some relationships. And then all of a sudden this school in Gaffney, South Carolina called and said, "Hey, why don't you come down here and start recruiting kids to come play for us, you know, not going back to Marshall." And so first thing I did when I got that call, I called Barry and Larry, both of them. I said, "Hey, if I get this job, you're both coming with me. We're not done yet." Same time, it was same thing, right? Same thing. Brand new startup program like KCU. They've been around for 4 years, hadn't had a lot of success for whatever reason. And let's go down and make an impact and see if we can't flip another program around and have some fun and live in the South. There's palm trees down here. And and so they did it. They did it. They came down and we went to work in 2016-17 and had a heck of a run for 2 years.
Awesome. Well, you were with another acquaintance of mine who I coached with two different places here at ECU and at UNC, Chuck Pagano.
Yep.
And he's been on a podcast, and he's now retired in Boise. Do you still talk to Chuck at all?
I do. I actually check in with him every once in a while. You know, after KCU, I mean, after Limestone in 17, my roommate from Arena Football happened to be Matt Nagy, who got the head job at the Chicago Bears, called and offered me opportunity to come up there and be the wide receiver coach. And while I was up there, was around a bunch of unbelievable men, highly, highly respected coaches in the league, been around a long time. But one of the years we got a chance to hire Coach Pagano as our D coordinator. And of course, myself growing up and watching his journey in Indianapolis and just, you know, everything that he's been through and his faith and what he stands for, it was all real, right? It was unbelievable. And I had so much respect for him from the beginning. It was like we've known each other for a long time. Great, great conversations, a lot of respect for each other. And so, yes, I still keep in touch with him and check in on him. And he was so good to me while I was there in Chicago.
No doubt. Well, yeah, I'd like for you to give us some details about your family. I'd love to know more about Corin.
And go ahead.
And your kids.
Yeah, so we have my wife and I have now been married going on almost 21 years or so. We met in second grade. I wish every day that I would have dated her a lot longer before, you know, the time that we started dating after college. But you know, the good Lord has a plan. But it's been the best thing that's ever happened to me. She keeps me in line. She's everything. You know, she just she holds me accountable, right? And as you know, the Blackstones, she's pretty stubborn a little bit, but at the same time, she's goal driven, and we both hit it off really well, and we hold each other up. And so we're fortunate enough to have three kids. Our youngest, who our oldest is Michaela. She's a freshman in college. She goes to Liberty University, which we have become very, very fond of because of their, you know, obviously their prestigiousness that they have over there, and you know their what they stand for and the faith that they have at that school is just so respectable. And then got a middle child, Stone. If anybody can figure out my wife's maiden name is Blackstone, so we took the black off and got the stone on there and really named him after, you know, Corin's side of the family. And when I was Larry or Barry, we'll debate about that later, but after both of them, to be honest with you, for what the influence they both had in all of our lives. But Stone's our middle. He'll be a junior in high school, plays football. And then the other one, our youngest, is a Cannon, who also is 16. He's the youngest in the class. Stone is the oldest in the class. We moved so much that they wanted to make sure they always had an immediate friend right away in each other. And so they're in the same grade, but those are our three kids.
Well, you know, I was thinking that you and the Blackstones have something in common, fast twitch qualities. Because, you know, learning more about Larry as I got to know him in college and knew that he was actually a fullback. And was Barry a running back as well?
Yeah, actually, Barry was a running, you know, actually Barry was the MVP of the national championship game. Did you remember that?
I didn't know that.
Oh yeah. He was the MVP. Now Larry had every award in the world, right? So Larry was the drafted by the Raiders. He was from everything that I've read and everybody that I talked to, Larry Blackstone was big time. Right. And, you know, to be drafted to the Oakland Raiders, obviously he did some great things, you know, at Fairmont, but you know, in the national championship game, Barry had a pretty good game. And so they actually had the banquet for winning the national championship game, and they gave out all these awards, and Larry got every single award that night. And then so they came to the last award, and they said, now we're going to give the award for the most valuable player for the national championship game. They said Larry stood up. And they said Barry Blackstone. So Larry always says to this day that he always says that he did it because he wanted to be the first one to stand up to congratulate his brother. But as you and I both know, that probably wasn't the case. But I'll tell you this, they don't know this, and probably the first time I've ever really told them this, and I'll tell them this because I'm doing this with you. But, you know, Larry got drafted by the Oakland Raiders, yep. Never got a chance to play in the NFL. And my father-in-law, he got married in college. So, you know, had a family and had, you know, a lot of priorities that happened right away. And so really for him to play after college, you know, didn't work out the way I'm sure he probably thought of when he was growing up. And so I'll tell you this, Coach, I always tell my kids all the time that you need to have a why, right? Like, what's your purpose? Like, what are you doing this for? A lot of people say money, or they're doing it for the fame, they're doing it for this, or doing it for that. The best answer that I've ever heard is they're doing it to be the greatest player that's ever played the game, right? Like that's the mentality.
Right.
But I always had in the back of my mind that I always had an extra push, right? And that push was, ever since I fell in love with my wife and got married, I had two guys that both of them became like father figures to me. And my dad was unreal. My dad pushed me the hardest he could push me in the right way. He was phenomenal. And he taught me so much about work ethic and resilience and how to just continue to keep pushing. But everything that I've learned from Larry and Barry and everything that they didn't get a chance to experience, like I wanted to do everything I could to maximize my opportunity in the league so they can experience it as well. And that was something that always kind of stuck with me throughout my career. And it's continued to this day to see the excitement in my father-in-law and Larry, who's really my father-in-law, but to see both of those guys kind of live all that and now have the opportunity to coach in Chicago and for them to experience that, now coach here at South Carolina or coach with each other. It's been pretty neat for them. It's been pretty neat for myself to see them experience all that. And again, not to take away anything from my father. My father, I wouldn't be where I'm at today if it wasn't for him. But those two guys at that time in my life, to be able to have kind of that thing to push me a little bit more for they can experience it, I think it's made a difference and definitely allowed me to work harder and achieve a lot more. And they're very special people. You know that.
Yeah, well, that's what we have in common. We've been heavily influenced by two great men. And, you know, I used to stay the summers at Salem. And not a whole lot of guys were there. But, you know, I love to train. I love to lift. I love to run. And I just wanted to try to be the best I could be because I never thought I was fast enough, never thought I was big enough. You know, I mean, but I'd go to Larry's house frequently in the summer. And, you know, back then, coaches, they didn't get paid a whole lot.
Right.
And, you know, he had a simple house, but he had that little dog named Raider.
Yep.
Who he named, I'm sure because of the fact that he got drafted by the Raiders. Raider was a little chihuahua. He was a mean little guy. He didn't like me too much, but but Larry really loved that dog. But they had a garden, and they'd have me over for dinner, and we'd have some fresh food out of the garden and so forth. And all that was really special to me to have a coach, you know, that I could go to his house and hang out with, you know, while I was there in the summer. So, I always really appreciated that.
Yeah, you know, both of them, and I say both of them because they both did it. You know, the impact that they had on kids and how both of them had tried to push so many kids to get into college and take them to, you know, to have opportunities to go to college and all those kind of things. The impact that both of those guys have made on players' lives, like that was that's their wealth. Right. That's their gratification. and they've taught me a lot. They're both old school. But at the same time, the way they relate to players still to this day, or they communicate to players, or what they've taught me is I think it's still the method. And both of them are very special to be able to have that delivery, that presence. As you know, they both have that presence. It's fun to be in the room with both of them.
So I got another question for you. Football wise, did you run a 52 slant and angle at Limestone?
We ran a 52. We ran a 52 slant in 2013. I'm sorry, 2011, 12, and 16 and 17 at KCU and at Limestone. But again, you know, to Larry's credit and who was our D coordinator, you know, he's one of the top 10 defenses in the country wherever we've been. And the guys bought into it. And, you know, I think one of the greatest things that I've learned from those guys, both of them, is you can win a lot of football games with less talent and a bunch of guys that just love ball.
Yeah.
And he got both of those guys. They got guys that love ball. They got guys to trust them. They put them in positions that the kids would succeed in. And once those kids started seeing success, you know, it became contagious. And then they become leaders, and then they became, you know, a football team. And I've learned that. And I think the most proudest thing that I can say is I think I got a chance to do all of that with that philosophy at KCU and at Limestone twice. And we did it right every time. And it was a little bit old school and a little bit new school, but it was a lot of love going with it. And the kids loved both of those guys. Both of those guys are truly, truly loved by every player that we had at KCU and Limestone.
You know, I love the 52 slant angle because it seemed like it was always gap sound. And the other thing was out there playing corner, you know, seemed like we always had pretty good pressure on a quarterback. So that helped me quite a bit.
So, yeah, it's the worst thing to practice against, though. I mean, there'd be half the times I just stop practice. Larry, just take your group down there, go do whatever you want. We can't get no practice going off on. They're playing cover zero right now. It's worked for a long time. When you believe in it, it works, and they made it work. You know, they both did. I mean, what Barry did with the 52 slant at Jonathan Alder and the 15 year straight run for the most, you know, I think he had the longest playoff run in the state of Ohio at one time. And his defense was, they were unbelievable. And it was just a bunch of kids that loved ball and played the 52 slant and ran the midline.
Yeah. Gotcha. Well, I'm about 2 weeks away from my health and life coach certification. So when you were talking about the why, what we try to do is always try to find the why underneath the why.
Yeah.
Through active listening. But the other thing is talk about magnificent obsessions. So the future, your future, what are two or three of your magnificent obsessions that you want to accomplish?
You know, I just want to be known for making a difference. It's really the only thing I want to accomplish in regards to just, you know, when you always talk about what do you want on your tombstone, right? You know, left the legacy of Jesus, but made an impact in people's lives, right? And I think that's the biggest thing that I would like to have in the future. Right now, you know, having this opportunity to be the wide receiver coach at South Carolina, to be with Coach Beamer, who I think is a phenomenal man. He's an unbelievable coach. He's an unbelievable person. So for me to have the opportunity to go to learn from him, to learn how he does things, obviously the history of his family, everything that he's learned from his dad, and then to be around some of the other coaches that we have that have prestigious coaching careers. Right now, all I want to do is be able to maximize my opportunity at South Carolina and make a difference and help coach win ball games and do it the right way. So that's really, I'm not a real big down the road kind of guy. As you and I both know, that's God's will. And he always tells us, you know, there's enough to worry about today, then worry about tomorrow. And so right now my job is to do everything I can to help Coach Beamer win down here at South Carolina. And that's what I wake up every day looking forward to.
Yeah, you know, East Carolina and South Carolina have a little bit of history. And, you know, during my time through the 90s, we beat South Carolina, I think, five times. We were down there, and, of course, you know, I worked with Bill Lewis and Steve Logan, great coaches, very fortunate to work with them. But we went down there during Hurricane Floyd, and we ended up winning the game against Lou Holtz. And then, of course, we had to stay down there because we couldn't come back home because of the hurricane for a whole week. And then we couldn't even play in our home stadium. We played Miami, and Butch Davis was with Miami then. And, man, I think they had about 20-some guys off that team that got drafted. But we ended up winning that game. We played them at NC State Stadium. So
wow.
I'll never forget that experience. Yeah. But we had quite a rivalry with South Carolina. So, been down there quite a few times in that stadium, and it is a tremendous venue.
Yeah, it's the fan base, the facilities, the resources, the location. It's unbelievable. And I think Coach Beamer has put together a heck of a staff. And the players, it's a lot of fun to go into work every single day.
Well, Mike, I'm going to keep following your career. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing. And it motivates me to do better just hearing what you've done.
Well, I appreciate it. But as you just said, I haven't done anything. The good Lord has. I've just lived it with everything that I have and to the max. And I just continue to live his will and let his will be done. And very blessed, blessed and fortunate to have unbelievable family and unbelievable career. And my goal is to be able to make a difference in people that the youth that we're around, and hopefully one day they get to experience their goals just like we have.
No doubt. Well, thanks a lot for coming on, and good luck this season. Who you open up with?
We open up with ODU. Game one. So, but we got a lot of work to get done before we get to that point. A lot of work this summer, as you know, in the weight room and everything else. But the guys have been ready for it.
Well, I know East Carolina plays ODU this year as well.
Okay.
I think they play them up there.
Gotcha. Yep. So
that'll be interesting. But I'm going to leave with some scripture.
Yes, sir.
Psalm 9:9. The Lord is a stronghold for the oppressed, a stronghold in times of trouble, and those who know your name put their trust in you, for you, O Lord, have not forsaken those who seek you. So I'll leave you with that, Mike, and thanks so much. Be looking forward to speaking to you sometime in the future.
Look forward to it. Thank you so much. I truly can't thank you enough. Thank you. And thank you for what you've meant to our family, too. I know your name's been around a long time since I've been in this family for 20 some years. And I know we've crossed paths, but from afar, a lot of respect for your career, what you've done, the impact that you've made on people. You know, I kind of keep things a little bit tight around where we're at and you know, stay busy. But from afar, I've always I've followed your journey. A lot of respect for you. And again, the way you treat people. And the way you've treated my family, I can't thank you enough.
Thanks a lot. Take care. Be talking to you soon.
Look forward to it. Thank you.
All right.
All right.
You've been listening to Absolute Empowerment with Coach Jeff Connors on The Sports Objective. Join us every Monday night for a new edition of the show. Listen to the show pretty much everywhere podcasts are found. Be sure to follow us on social media at TheSportsOBJ on Twitter and TikTok, at TheSportsObjective on Instagram. Like and follow our Facebook page and subscribe to our YouTube channel. As always, we appreciate you listening to the show, and go Pirates!